The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Take this job and shove it.
Get ready to go into business for yourself. The Franchise Academy Radio Show with your host and small business and franchise expert, Tom Skarda.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Skarda, and this is the Franchise Radio Show. And we are coming to you from Long Island. Our studio is in MacArthur Airport here in Suffolk County, and it's 103.9 FM in Suffolk County, and the franchiseradioshow.com. If you're listening and you don't have access to the radio, you can listen on the internet, on the line, as my mother would say. We have to listen on the line. So my mission here is to educate the public about the franchise industry and really help people understand really unbiased information and help franchise buyers and also franchise companies and franchise luminaries disseminate the best practices for existing franchises and business owners and also help people understand how to buy a franchise and make a platform for suppliers to the franchise industry so they can educate business owners and the public. And you can listen to us live every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, and our podcast is on iTunes. And, of course, you can check out my book, The Franchise Savvy, which is 6 strategies that pros use to pick a top-performing franchise on Amazon. If you want a free copy of my new ebook, The Road to Franchise Freedom, you can get a free copy and download the PDF. Just go to 21franchisetraps.com. And it's just 20 pages, and it tells you things to think about and not get messed up with as you're looking for a franchise. Tonight's really exciting. I've been waiting for this for probably about 4 months now to get a good friend of mine, Mitch Cohen, on the air with me. So Mitch is in the studio. We're very excited. Mitch Cohen is currently the CEO of a Management 360 LLC and responsible for the development of 5 Jersey Mike subs on Long Island. And he's also on the Franchise Relations Committee and co-chair at the IFA, the International Franchise Association, and currently the Field Engagement Manager for Joy and Childhood Foundation. And Mitch also has just received the Long Island Business News Corporate Citizenship Nonprofit of the Year Award 2015 for his work as the co-chair of the Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins Community Foundation. And quite a resume here. So, you know, more than 32 years, Mitch has been an owner of Dunkin', sold shares, and is now out of that and deep in with Jersey Mike's. So welcome, Mitch.
Thanks, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, this is awesome. It's so great to have you. And we've got so much to talk about. We have only an hour, but it's going to go fast. I know it. I know it already. So Mitch and I know each other from the International Franchise Association and from the different events that we go to and, you know, striving to be better, franchisees and better, people in the franchise community. And it's just a great community. So I have a million questions. But I wanted to really talk about first. So you were in Dunkin'. How long were you at Dunkin'?
So myself and my partners, we were in Dunkin' since 1983. We were with Baskin-Robbins first, and we had 15 Baskin-Robbins locations. And then in 2001, we took on our Dunkin's, and we had 13 locations on Long Island. And each one of our partners had a different role in the company. I was kind of in the operations side and also making sure that the distribution and production of our donuts were in the store on time. Mm-hmm. My other partners handled the different facets of the business, which helped us. And we've been partners for over 33 years. So it was pretty exciting. At the time, we didn't have an exit strategy to depart from Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins. But as they say in New York, someone made us an offer you can't refuse.
Yes.
And with that, you know, came a lot of thought process on when we start to develop a new business, how do we go about that and how do we learn from our mistakes? And one of a mistake we could say we made was not having an exit strategy. It sounds silly that you're going to talk about buying a franchise, but and then at the same time setting up an exit strategy. But it's something that we didn't plan for. And if we did, we might have been able to do different things with some of the profits that we got.
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that you need to start with the beginning in mind. Well, start with the end in mind when you're beginning your project. And if you have, like you're saying, the wherewithal to understand where those profits are coming from and then be able to transfer it into something bigger and better for whatever it might be, even your retirement, you know, on a Bahama island somewhere, it's a nice way to go. So what do you look for when you're selecting a franchise?
So I think you have to do a lot of due diligence. First, you have to find your passion. You know, you don't want to take a franchise that or a business that you're not passionate about and try to own it. Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing is do some soul searching, figure out what your passions are. And then, depending on those passions, go into the field and start doing research on your franchisors. We looked for franchisors that were in a growth mode. We looked for franchisors that were had the same philosophies and values that we had, that wanted to be part of the community, and that had a philanthropic arm to them that we could attach ourselves to. We feel that those qualities in a franchisor really help the marriage that you're going to create when you sign the documents, right? Because being a franchisee is a relationship and a marriage. Mm-hmm. And it's a contract that goes on for 20 plus years, hopefully. And you need to make sure that you're picking the right partner.
Right. Yeah. It's like getting married. You know, I say that
it is,
you know, when you're doing your due diligence, it's like, you know, dating. And so it's really serious business, and it could be, you know, worse than marriage if you pick the wrong partner.
Right. And I think that part of that due diligence process is, like I said, you find the company that you're passionate about or the venue that you're passionate about. And then you start looking at the franchisors and do they have the same qualities that you have?
Right.
There are some franchisors that are absolutely terrific. There are also some that might not be so good. And you need to dig into their information and find that out. And then once you make that decision, it's really based on then doing a performer. Is this business mm-hmm. going to perform in the area I'm in? And how do we decide how much risk level you're willing to take? Because some businesses are, you know, say entry fee is in the 200s and some are in the millions.
Right.
So where's the risk that you want to take? And you have to identify that within yourself.
Yeah, right. And they do vary from, you know, a couple of, you know, 100,000 to millions. So there's no question about it. But back to the passion piece, you know, I always heard that if you love your job, you know, you never work a day in your life. And I believe that's true. In business, I believe it's a little bit different, though. I mean, you don't have to, you know, love, I mean, you could be a vegetarian and own, you know, McDonald's or a food franchise. So the I think you got to have the passion for the industry, but some people get confused, like, oh, I love baseball, so I want to own, you know, batting cages. And that's not going to be a great business model, perhaps, you know, for them.
Right.
So I think you really have to weigh out how you want to spend your days, what it's really going to take out of your life to run the business.
I agree with that. I think that the big issue when you're deciding, am I passionate about it? So if it's food, it could be any type of food. It doesn't have to be burgers or hot dogs or ice cream, but your food. You've got that silo that says I'm passionate about food. If I'm passionate about sports, then it's going to be something in that industry. Right. But I don't think you want to fine tune it to one specific thing before you do your research.
Right.
There's so many opportunities out there. You know, there's over 700,000 opportunities in franchising.
Right.
So it's a lot.
It's like crazy. It was funny because somebody commented on one of my Facebook, one of my YouTube videos the other day. Just some random person just said franchising is a scam. And I was about to engage him, and I was like, well, you know, there's 733,000 units of franchises all over America. You know, I mean, it's 11 trillion in output. You know, it's 2% of the whole gross domestic product in the United States. I mean, it's far from a scam.
The numbers are real. We could dig into them a little bit later. The numbers are definitely real. What the industry puts out. I think there's a lot of miscommunication and miseducation to the general public of what franchising is.
Right.
And so that's why you would get comments like that, because a lot of people might think, oh, it's a pyramid scheme or whatever
right.
it is.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, it's just because one of the things we didn't do well in the industry, in franchising in general, is educate people what franchising actually is.
Right.
And it's kind of one of the things that I do when I bring new employees on. I actually have a conversation with them, says, do you know what franchising is?
Wow.
And then I ask them, and if they're not sure, I go into a lengthy explanation so they understand. And I'm talking about 16 to 25 plus year olds.
Right, right.
That don't quite understand what franchising is. They could name a franchise, you know, they could name McDonald's. They know that's a franchise, but they're not sure what it means.
Right, right. It's funny because at the IFA meeting in February in Vegas, they said from the stage, they did a big survey last year and found out that 70% of Americans don't even know what a franchise is.
Correct.
And what the whole business model is all about. You know, for me personally, I changed my life. I went from working for the Long Island Railroad and the MTA to owning my own franchise, and changed everything. And it was a blessing. It was the American dream. And that's why I'm so passionate personally about franchising, because what it's done for me in my life. So and that's what this show is all about, is really trying to educate folks about really what the reality is out there. And, you know, and everybody knows somebody who lost their shirt in a franchise. And some of those stories are true. Some of them are not. I've had, great success in a franchise. I've had a failure in a franchise, and there's reasons for it. And mainly it's because you dodge into something without doing the research. That's what I had a problem with.
Right. And a lot of times, you know, listen, I always tease people when I do speaking. I said that, you know, I'm the smartest person in the room, and I talk to franchisors all the time, and they kind of chuckle. And I said, I'm just kidding. I said, I bought into a system. I knew going in, I couldn't develop all those systems myself.
Right.
So I find myself to be the smartest person in the room because I decided that I needed help and I bought into a system.
Mm.
And if you can understand that, and then you follow the system, you don't try to outgame the system, then there's a good chance you'll be successful. A lot right. of times the failures could be a variety of things, location.
Sure.
But a lot of times it's the relationship between the franchisor and franchisee and or the franchisee not following the systems, because we're entrepreneurs at heart, and we want to be the entrepreneur, but we have to admit to ourselves that we're an entrepreneur and we need help. And
right.
that's why we picked a system that we think is going to fit what we need to do.
No question about it. I mean, every great entrepreneur that I know that started their own business from scratch, if they're really, really great, they have a coach, or they belong to one of the CEO type meetings like Vistage or something like that, and they get help. You can't do it by yourself. I mean, we could go on and on about all the sports figures that have coaches, and even a lot of the, you know, music dynamos that are out there, they all have life coaches. It's absolutely amazing. And franchising is kind of like a big giant coach in a way. And I was just explaining to somebody this afternoon, one of my candidates I was talking about, he's thinking about buying something in North Carolina. And I said, you know, the franchise, it's not just the franchise, but it's the franchisees. You get so much help just from the franchisees. And then as I launched my career wider and got involved with the International Franchise Association, I was like, oh my God, I thought I was like on an island, and there's thousands of people. There's more than 4,000 people at the meeting in February from all different walks of life in the franchise industry. Just absolutely amazing to me.
And when you go to events like that, they're so willing to share their best practices and give you some of their knowledge. Just
amazing.
on that note, just early on in Jersey Mike Subs, so there's a couple on Long Island right now. We are in the process of training our employees, and I went to an existing franchisee and he said, bring me your manager. Let your manager work in my store and learn before he gets into your store.
Yeah.
What business do you get somebody saying, give me one of your employees, I'm going to help them.
It's amazing.
Be as great as they could be. So when they come to work for you, they're going to be great. You don't find that in other industries.
You don't find that. And it's so refreshing when you come out of corporate America and you have that kind of welcoming attitude. Where in corporate America, everybody's out to stab you in the back and, you know, try to get ahead. We're here. Everybody, you're all building equity in the same brand. You're trying to help each other. It's just a different world. And a lot of people just don't understand it. And they kind of poo-poo it. But it's really just a dynamic thing for everybody involved. And so that's why I'm so passionate about it. So kind of a silly question is, you know, why'd you pick a franchise instead of starting your own business? And that's, you just answered the question. I mean, that was on my mind. I wanted to ask you.
Yeah. I mean, I started in this business right out of college, and I definitely wouldn't have had the wherewithal or the resources to join or start my own ice cream shop.
Right.
And, you know, Mitch's ice cream shop would have been a great thing, but Baskin Robbins was much better in the 80s.
Yeah.
And everybody knew what that was. And the point of entry was to go work for somebody and at a college and eventually become their partner and grow a network. And that's kind of how we did it. And it worked.
Yeah. That's phenomenal. Really, really cool stuff. One thing that I wanted to talk about, and I was just talking to somebody today who I placed in a cleaning franchise, the cleaning authority out in Rockville Center, Len Caporeals, if he's listening, I'm not sure, but the labor pool, there's a lot of static I'm hearing from franchise owners in all different industries. So what's your take on labor these days?
So I think we go through different cycles when it comes to labor. Look, you and I started, we were kids. We had our own, the owners of that business probably had their own quirks about, I've got to hire these kids. Oh, I don't know what they were, because I think we were probably perfect.
But, right. Yeah, of course you were, I know that.
We talk about millennials all the time. And to me, we just need to relate and adjust to the workforce that we're going to bring on board.
Yeah.
And whatever those adjustments might be. You know, you can't, everything's a digital world now. Right. So you have to adjust your training to make sure that it's something they're going to retain and want to use. And so you might look at digital training.
Yep.
And when you become a fun work atmosphere, it's still productive, and you give them a cause while they're there. I find it, although it could be a tough pool, I think there's plenty of people that are looking for work in our industry. And I think what we have to do is break the mold, what we're used to, and say, okay, here's the field. How do we get the players? And what type of players are we getting?
Right.
And not try to just be, this is it. We're going to stick to this. We're not going to, you know, we're going to hand out brochures. It's going to be 50 pages. And talk the language of our employees and not talk the language that we spoke 15 years ago. It's different now. I think a lot of the problems are, again, from a little bit of lack of education too, not on the employees' part, but on the public's part, because the public perceives us, franchising in general, as a big business. Right. And we're really a bunch of small businesses operating independently. I'm an independent store owner. I just happen to buy a sign and a system. And so there's a lot of, you hear a lot of static on the news about minimum wage and things like that. They need to have a fair wage. We need to be willing to do that. At the same time, we need to make sure that we're being responsible to ourselves and to them, that we're training them and teaching them life skills along the way. That's what they're looking for. And we keep the wage at a normal level that is acceptable for the business to survive.
Yeah. I mean, if there was a big attack, you know, last year and the year before on franchising regarding minimum wage and all that kind of stuff. And I think they were going after the wrong animal. I mean, it was just not, it was like a witch hunt for the wrong witch. And, cause you know, we're providing so many jobs and helping so many people, and it's really, you know, everybody needs a fair wage. There's no question about it, but this is not where, this is not your last stop, you know?
Right.
This is to teach you the skills. It teaches people how to show up on time and do the tasks without, you know, being told, okay, you did this, now you do this. You give them a list, you tell them, you know. So it's training. It's the best training there is in America for a job. And
no doubt. Not only that, there's a lot of interaction. You're teaching them some self-esteem skills. Mm-hmm. You're teaching them how to communicate eye to eye. Right. They're not working their phone and texting. I mean, and franchising creates 7.6 million jobs last year in 2016. And the projection is there'll be like almost 8 million in 2017.
It's amazing.
So the numbers are staggering. And so, but it's not easy to retain the employees. There's no question about that. You have to work hard at that. And I think by giving them a purpose and giving them responsibility, I think the workforce today that I'm hiring wants responsibility. So if we can give that to them, they're going to stick around.
Right. And I think they're looking for, you know, responsibility, you know, corporate responsibility. They want to get on that bandwagon. And I want to talk about that when we come back from the break, is what you guys are doing charity-wise. Because people want to align with a great business that is doing great things, doing well and doing good at the same time. So, this is the Franchise Radio Show, and we have Mitch Cohen with us tonight, and this is exciting. Mitch has just such a wide breadth of experience in franchising for 30 years as a franchisee, and we have a whole bunch of things we're going to talk about in the next segment, and we're going to break for a commercial now, so stay tuned. And this is Tom Scarter. This is the Franchise Radio Show, 103.9 FM, Suffolk County, Long Island, and we'll be right back.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Take this job and shove it.
And now back to the Franchise Academy Radio Show with your host and small business and franchise expert, Tom Scarta.
And welcome back to the Franchise Radio Show. My name is Tom Scarta. And I'm a franchise consultant. I actually own a business that matches people with franchise opportunities based on skills and personality and goals. Kind of, I like to call it the e-harmony of business. And I wrote a book called Franchise Savvy. It's actually number one bestseller on Amazon right now in business books. It's the six strategies that pros use to pick a top-performing franchise. You can pick that up on Amazon. But if you want a free book, or a free copy of my new ebook, I should say, The Road to Franchise Freedom. It's just 20 pages. It's an ebook, but you get a free copy at 21franchisetraps.com. And in that book, me and my friend Matt Stevens talk about the traps that people fall into when picking a franchise and how to avoid those traps. And, you know, if you get a chance, you want more information, follow me on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. And I'm here tonight with Mitch Cohen, who is a luminary in franchising, been around for 30 years and had owned a bunch of Dunkin' Donuts and is expanding Jersey Mike's Subs here on Long Island now. So it's just a wealth of information. I'm excited to have him here. So welcome back, Mitch.
Thanks, Tom.
Glad you're here. So in the earlier segment, we were talking about strategic alliances with nonprofits and stuff. Tell me a little bit about what you're involved in these days.
So I actually wear two hats. After I sold the stores at Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin Robbins, I was the co-chair of their foundation, which was renamed to the Joy on Childhood Foundation. And I am now the engagement manager. We created an area for the vendors to partner with us. It's franchisees and corporate people and our vendors to raise money to give to two major charities, which is Feeding America and the Starlight Network. We want to make sure that we bring joy to sick and hungry kids. We have 8 chapters across the country. The franchisees have events in all the chapters across the country, so they're involved in their community, and all the money goes back to their community. Oh, so you cool. have the two nationals that I spoke of, and then each chapter could use the money that they raise to grant to their local charities that fit the mission of bringing joy to sick and hungry kids.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's one of my passions. And when we talked about how do you find a franchise and what do you look for, so Jersey Mike Subs, they have a philanthropy arm, and this year they do the month of giving in March, and on the last day of March, every franchisee in the country gives 100% of their sales to a charity.
Wow.
And it's usually the charity of choice of the franchisee, so it's within the community. This year they did Make-A-Wish as a group and raised over $4.5 million in the month of March.
Wow.
Yeah, to give back to the community. So when we were going through the food selection, and we looked at different sandwich vendors or franchisors. Jersey Mike's stuck out because of one of the great things they do is they really want to be part of the community. They want to be the sub shop of the community.
That is awesome. I didn't realize that. How many units do they have now around the country?
So Jersey Mike's is about 1,200 units. I think they're projecting to have about 1,500 by the end of this year.
Oh, okay.
They started back in 1956. Yeah. And interesting story there. The owner of the company now is Peter Cancro, actually bought the store he was working in. And he teamed up with his football coach to get the money.
Wow.
So talk about the American dream. He bought, and then they built it into this franchise operation of almost 1,500 units.
Wow. And I didn't even know they were around that long. I thought it was relatively, you know, recent, you know, 20 years or something like that.
Yeah, it started back in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. So back in 1956.
That's amazing to me.
The guy named Mike, I guess.
Yeah, right. That is news to me. That's so awesome. And I love that. It's funny because I had the president of Vantaclean on, Jeff Duden, last week, and he was talking about their relationship with St. Jude's. And he was saying that one of the things that he does when he interviews a new franchisee or prospective franchisee is he asks that franchisee if you found that somebody in the neighborhood needed their house cleaned and they didn't have the money for it and their child was coming back from hospitalization, you know, cancer or what have you, would you do their house for free? And based on that answer is how he awards franchises. Yeah, of course, there's a lot more to it, but that's like a really big thing. And so, you know, that it just goes to show, I mean, this is prevalent through franchising. I could rattle off a bunch of franchises and the charities that they work for and the charities they stand for and stand with. It's you know, it's just a great thing. I love it.
And it's important. We talked about the workforce, right? So today's workforce for franchising in the food industry especially is our younger adults. Right. And every one of them at some point has done some community service.
Yeah.
And they want to continue to do that. It gives them a feeling of worth because they're just starting out there and they're excited when they find out. So in Jersey Mike's that we're opening, we're going to give our grand opening week, we're going to make a donation for every sub purchased for $2. We give out $2 cards. Everything's going to the Stony Brook Children's Hospital. Mm. And we'll do that for at least a week. And the employees were so excited to hear that. And none of them have done anything with the Children's Hospital yet, but now they want to be part of that philanthropy arm to do that.
Yeah.
And it's really a cool thing. And I'm glad we can do it. I'm glad I could work also for the brand that I had passion for 33 years mm-hmm. and bring joy to sick and hungry kids. And that funny number, 4.5 million, that's what we raised last year also from that charity. And
wow.
And we were able to give out over 90% of the money is granted out every year.
That's amazing.
So it's great stuff. Yeah.
That's huge. That's big. A lot of times charities don't give out that much of what they collect, but that's awesome. That's really, really exciting to me. So where's you're going to open up 5 stores for Jersey Mike's?
We've signed on for 5 stores, but our first location is going to be in Hopog at the Hopog Plaza on the corner of 454 and 111.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping that's going to open July 12th, sorry.
Okay.
Which is a Wednesday. Our second location is going to be in Port Jeff Station on 347.
Yeah.
In a plaza that is co-joined by Brookhaven Locksmith, for those of you guys out in Suffolk County at 347, and we'll be hopefully open there by September 1st.
Nice.
And then we're working on 2 other deals right now. We'd like to have all 5 open by 2019.
Yeah, for sure. Are they all going to be Suffolk, or could you go into Nassau with them?
Our area, when we bought the area, is Suffolk, is an area in Suffolk, not all of Suffolk. So yeah, everything we have will be in Suffolk County, and okay. All our Dunkins were in Suffolk as well.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's awesome. So one thing that people get stuck on is financing. What ways have you found that financing could work in franchising?
So I think the first default when you go out is the SBA loans. Mm-hmm. I think everybody wants to get onto the SBA bandwagon. It's a great tool. it gets a little cumbersome, and you need to read through the papers to make sure what you're actually signing on to, because there's a lot of personal guarantees involved.
That's
one area. What I found is that when we first started, we actually went to friends and family. And although people say don't mix friends and family in business, it's a good opportunity, because a lot of times you just need some down money, and then after the first year, you're pretty financeable. And also, the other thing you want to think about when you're choosing a franchisor is that franchise system financeable? Are the banks lending to that system? If they are, you have the opportunity to put together a portfolio and go to your local. I prefer the local community banks, because again, they also want to be part of the community.
And
a great story for them is, hey, I just set up Tom with a great loan. He's got a great business, and it's in the community.
Right.
And that's a great story for them to tell.
Yeah, providing jobs and paying taxes.
Right, exactly.
It's great for the community. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Have you had any dealings with like credit unions at all?
We haven't done anything with credit unions in my past.
Okay.
We've been working mostly with local banks, like I said, community banks.
Right.
We've dealt with a couple of big boys when we had the Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin Robbins.
Yep.
That's always opportunity. I prefer to be a small business and deal with small business banks, because I think some of the obligations that the bigger banks are looking for really put a stress on your business, especially when you're starting up.
Yep, no question about it. So, I mean, you've had a lot of experience and seen a lot of people, ups and downs in franchising. Do you think that franchising is for everyone?
I don't think it's for everyone. Matter of fact, the first thing when somebody comes to me and says, hey, I'm an accountant and I love the business you're in and I want to see it. I said, okay, well then meet me at 6 a.m. in the morning and we're going to start baking the bread or we're going to make the donuts, whatever it might be, and walk in my shoes for a couple of days. And then let's talk about if you really want to be in this business.
That's cool.
And I find that a lot of times most people don't take me up on the offer. And they decide it's not for them. Those that do realize that there's more to it than turning the key, turning on the lights, and having other people work there. This is a business that you have to be hands-on to make it work, especially in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what just about every business out there, and there's a lot of companies that will call themselves absentee or whatever, but I could count on one hand, you know, how many successful absentee or semi-absentee businesses there really are. Anything could be absentee if you want to throw money at it and put a manager in there that may or may not work out for you. But no one is ever going to care for your business as much as you do.
True. So that's true. And I think when you talk to franchisors and they are recommending that you can run this business absentee, I think you have to take a second look at that business, because I think you have to develop the culture in your business the way you want to have that culture, make sure the systems are being run before you can go to the next store, to the next store, to the next store. And at some point, even though I might not be behind the counter slicing the meat and dressing the sandwich, I'm still involved in the business every day. I'll be in the stores. I'll talk to my managers. We'll have meetings. I'm not going to be sitting on the beach and waiting for the check to come, because the only thing that's going to come from that is I'll be sending a check to the bank to pay off my loan.
Right. That's it. So what is a day in a life for somebody like you who's a multi-unit franchise owner?
So I'm lucky that I have partners. I'm not alone. We each have a different part of our business that we run. I'll be running the operations. My other partner, Seth, will be running the finances. My partner, Al, runs the construction and development. My partner, Marvin, does a lot of the PR and marketing and all the social media that I'm not so savvy on.
Right.
But usually it's, you know, you're in the store early in the morning. You're working alongside your managers. You're doing everything that you would expect your crew to do to prepare the store for success.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will be in the store when it's open, making sure that I'm greeting the customers, that the service is first class, and I'm going to teach the employees the culture that they need to do the same thing. And when we're comfortable with that, then we'll move to the next location and we'll start all over again.
Right.
And we'll have a manager that is a clone of us. That's what we're looking for when we're hiring, you know, like you mentioned the cleaning guy. He talks about, would you clean somebody's house if they needed it? We ask questions around, what would you do in a business if something, you know, if a customer came in and had a complaint, how would you handle it? And based on that, if it's not the answer I would give, we have to start training and teaching. And if it doesn't work, we're going to be finding somebody else that could do that.
Yeah. So where do you look for employees? Do you go through services or do you just do Craigslist?
So we've been pretty fortunate, and I'm not sure why. It's luck, I think. But we've done simple things. We've gone to the high school with a job description of what we're looking for and went to their career counselor. We went to Suffolk Community College and went to their career counselor. And we have an influx of people that are looking for work, and this fits what they're looking for. Yeah. So I haven't used any of the paid services, and that's only from luck. I think that they serve a great need. I know other franchisees that use them. I think what you have to do, though, if you're going to use them, is make sure that your job description is very clear, because you don't want somebody that was in the security business coming into work in your shop because they're just looking for a job.
Right, right. And I don't think it's just luck. I mean, you're doing things that a lot of people just don't do, which is take the time out to go to the high school and talk to the guidance counselors. And, you know, Suffolk County Community College is really, really helpful to their students with getting jobs and doing things that are out of the box. They have a lot of cool stuff going on at that college for people looking for jobs. So that's really that's a cool thing. It's not just, you know, you make your luck happen, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, one of the things we did way back when was we had a Baskin-Robbins out in New England, out in Providence area, and Johnson & Wales. We went to Johnson & Wales and created an internship program for their pastry chefs to come in and make our cakes.
Oh, wow.
So for 11 weeks, we had a pastry chef in our store making cakes. And that was a way, we couldn't find a cake maker, right, at the time, that somebody was 16 or 18. So we actually had an 11-week program. Every 11 weeks, we had a new pastry chef come in, and work for us.
That's brilliant. I mean, that's just thinking out of the box. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of the stuff that we do.
I love that. That's good stuff. Man, that's the kind of stuff I want to talk to you more about. We're going to have to do that at another time. But that's great. So now, you know, you've been in the franchise industry 30 years. What's one myth that you would like to bust, if you could, right here, right now, about the franchise industry?
You know, that's a great question. I think there's several myths. I think the biggest one right now, we talked about a little earlier, is really just being able to educate the public that we are small business people. We have 1, 2, or 30 shops. It doesn't matter. We're still a small business person. And people look at the sign on the outside of the store and think that whatever the sign says, that's who you are. And that's not who you are. That's who you represent. And that's who you're paying a fee to represent that. And I think if we can get people to understand what franchising is and understand we're small business people, and at times we struggle just as much as
anybody else,
that they would be able to come into the shop with it and understand our business and understand we want to be supportive. And I think that franchising will grow more and more as we get to educate people what we actually are, and that we're great for the country. I mean, the truth of the matter is, you stated some of the numbers before, you know, 730,000 plus operations in the city, in the country, over $4 billion in the GDP.
Yeah.
And over 2% of the GDP is just franchising. So I think that's to me, that's the biggest thing that we have to work on.
Yeah, and the amount of jobs that we supply,
create, right? 7.9 million this year.
It's more than any other industry in job creation since the Great Recession, and it's always been like that. But there needs to be more of a focus, and that's where, you know, people like you and the IFA are trying to really bring out. And some people are finally listening in Washington, so that's a good thing. But it's just, I mean, you're right on with you know, this myth. That when you look at, you know, I mean, Subway's, everybody knows what Subway is, and you walk past a Subway, it's not Subway corporate, it's your neighbor that owns that store. It's just a regular guy who chose to do this business route and not take a job. It's not that corporate, you know, so we get this, that kind of bad, that bad dog, you know, the corporate greed and all that. And it's not that at all, especially as you talk about, you know, the different foundations and charity work that, that the franchise does. It's just like amazing to me.
And I agree. And I think that you said something really key there. It is your neighbor. And right. And it's not, you know, a CEO of a bank that's running this company. It's Joe Smith or Sally, who's working their tail off to pay the bills, to pay the employees, to create a lifestyle that they want to create, that they can live. Mm-hmm. And it's no different than going to work for AT&T in the morning. The difference is there's a lot more stress because you don't know if you're getting paid at the end of the day.
That's right.
So you have to pay everybody else first.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The owner's last to get paid. But you're creating, you know, goodwill in the community and doing great things, creating jobs, and it's just, you know, the average guy that owns the franchise, and, you know, man or woman, and there's so many different industries. So, you know, I mean, Jersey Mike Subs is just totally, I mean, expanding like mad. I mean, just doing so well. And there's so many different industries, though. So, you know, think about, you know, what you want to do with your life, whether, you know, if you're listening and thinking about, oh, I would love to own a franchise, but I don't have $1 million. Well, you know, guess what? You don't need $1 million. You could do it, you know, for well under $100,000 in certain industries. So, you know, think about that. And you could reach out to me at tom@thefranchiseacademy.com and ask any questions that you might have about franchising. And I'm here to help. And Mitch, any parting words that you'd like to...
I just want to say thank you for having me on. If you need me to come back, I'd be happy to. I hope what we did today helped somebody make a decision on this great business.
Yeah.
And I just appreciate being here. And I love being in this franchise business. There's nothing more that I would want to do than to operate businesses that belong to the franchise system.
Yep. And amen to that. And I appreciate you coming out, because I know you're really extremely busy, especially with the store opening any day. But yeah, look for Jersey Mike's opening up at a corner near you, all over Long Island. So I'm very excited. So this is Tom Scarta. This is the Franchise Radio Show, and we're on every Tuesday night. We're going to see you next week. Got some great guests, and we'll see you then. Good night.